You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is a show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world, and I want to thank you for tuning in. Today, we're going to be speaking about the commodity markets. We're going to be speaking about tokenization. I'm going to start out with that, and we're going to go into the geopolitical things that are going on in the oil markets, which is impacting everything. And we're going to bring on Money Man, what we call Money Man, to go over that and give you some context to that. But again, I'm going to start out with the tokenization, the commodity markets, because I think that we've seen tokenization in the space. I think what lacks is the high fidelity data that is necessary in order to do this the right way. All right, because the tokenization of commodity markets, it's a structural evolution. Commodity markets, look, they're traditionally dominated by physical settlement systems, paper-based documentation, and centralized clearing infrastructure, basically, you know, people putting their hands in the pot, and it's fee-driven. A lot of fees come out of that, and there's a room for error. There's a big room for error. Tokenization, it allows for commodities such as gold, silver, crude oil, and wheat, corn, other commodities to be represented digitally on blockchain networks while maintaining a verifiable link to an underlying physical asset. So you don't get rid of the human part of it. You eliminate a lot of it. But when I say the human part, I'm talking about the legal aspect. I'm talking about the custodian that is holding on to the documents that represent the commodity. So if you have gold or silver in a vault, or crude oil in the ground, or wheat or crude oil in barrels, or you have wheat or corn or something that's soon to be harvested, or in containers, whatever the case may be, if you have proof of this, verifiable proof that a legal custodian can hold on to, that's where that comes into play. That's important. That's important. Same thing when you're speaking about tokenizing stocks. You need the transfer agent involved there that is actually monitoring and controlling. Not so much controlling, but monitoring and making sure everything's okay as far as the shareholders go, so there's no fraud involved. So, and transfer agents, as far as the stock market goes, they're going to have to evolve. They're going to evolve or die. They're going to be forced to, especially with the NASDAQ and New York Stock Exchange. And even, they're going to go when they're looking to tokenize stocks. And that's going to happen probably early next year, if not this year. And it's going to change everything. Everything is going to change. Anyway, tokenized commodities, again, they can represent anything. You can have warehouse receipts, production output, it's representing what is happening there, and you can monetize it. Now, the big importance here, as I mentioned, is that high fidelity data. What that refers to when I say that, it's an accurate, verifiable, and continuously updated set of data, of information, and it's tied directly to that physical asset, the physical commodity asset. Okay, high fidelity data can go across commodities, stocks, bonds, whatever the case may be. It's about having transparency. That's what it comes down to. When you have, opaque markets, it's scary. It's like going and trading on the pink sheets with what they call the OTC ID now. They're trying to give it a better name, but when you're trading there, you don't know what's going on. If companies are actually filing their documents with the SEC because they're looking to uplist to NASDAQ or something. You know, at least you're getting that, but you have a lot of companies that don't do that. They trade there, they don't do that, and it's one of those things. Be careful. Be careful. It's been like that since the beginning of time. You know, since pink sheets, you know, rose their head, and they used to be on. Actually, pink sheets were called pink sheets for a reason, because you had a horizontal book. Actually, sorry, a vertical book that was pink, and that's where you had all the companies listed. It was ridiculous if you think about it, but that's the way it was back then. Look, for tokenized commodities, for them to function effectively, data that's there, that high-fidelity data, it must reflect a few things. Not only the location of the asset, but the quantity, the purity, the grade, you know, the custody chain, the issuer, the ownership history, the audit verification. This is when the lawyer gets involved, the storage conditions, all this stuff needs to be there. And if you have this information there, you're giving not only regulators, but the general public, you're giving them information. Blockchain systems, you know, they rely on trusted data inputs. So the more high fidelity data that's put into place, the better. Okay, and you have certain data sets, you have certain Oracle systems that are in place, and as long as that data is accurate, that becomes an Oracle. You know, Oracle of information for that particular token. You know, high fidelity data, it creates that transparent audit trail. So if someone wanted to know, hey, who owns this? You're going to know. Well, this token went from here to here. Who is the issuer? Well, you're going to know who the issuer is. You're also going to know where it went. And this is what becomes important. This is what helps even, you know, believe it or not, in these situations, you know, a transfer agent can get involved to go in and monitor stuff. But the regulators and the market participants, they can verify a lot of things. The existing of the underlying asset, because all that stuff is publicly seen. The history of the transactions, whether the tokens are fully backed by physical inventory or other things. And this is where the digital asset treasury comes into play. You know, and the great thing about it, as far as the high fidelity data, you know, what is being built and integrated into the Pico Novus blockchain is high fidelity information data. Okay, and it helps for the tokens to give more and more information, which is pretty cool. Anyway, so this level of transparency can reduce the risks associated with double counting inventories or unverified reserves, prevent fraud and scams and all that stuff. And you see this happen in certain commodity markets, and it happens more and more often. Look, tokenized commodity instruments, they can allow, and this is the great thing about it, it can allow for near instant settlement. Compared with what you have typically, you know, if you have gold, you know, and I'm talking about gold because, you know, everyone knows what gold is. They have it, they use it, they see it. The problem is, you know, who are you paying with gold? If you go to sell gold, you think it's going to settle immediately? You know, you think you're going to get things done immediately? No. You know, you try taking, you know, a bar of gold and go and sell it. Where are you going to sell it? You're not going to go to your local grocery store. You know, if you go to a refinery, they're going to give you less than what you think it's worth, because they have to go and re-refine it in order to show the purity. And what are you going to go to, a pawn shop? A pawn shop, they're going to rip you off. You know, so really that near instant settlement, as far as blockchain is concerned, is important. You know, because you can get things done quickly, globally. Right now, if you were somewhere in Europe and you had, you know, a kilo of gold and you wanted to go and sell that to someone in South America and they wanted to do that, you know, you're going to have to ship it and do all this other stuff first before you see dime one. If you have it tokenized, you can perform the transaction and, you know, almost immediately. You know, of course, you can have some escrow things in place in order to make things happen, but you can settle it and have that shipped over so they can have the physical if they want physical. If not, they can just trade the token or hold on to the token, and that's where that comes into, because if you have the physical commodity backing the token, that is locked. You know, that you cannot move that. That's where the lawyers, and I keep talking about lawyers because that's when they get involved, because they lock it in. Okay, and then also, you know, it allows for fractional tokenization. Okay, when you have, you know, 18 or 15 to 18 decimal points in the blockchain, you can break this up into little itty bitty pieces that anyone can get involved if they so choose. Okay, and you know, liquidity, this helps to increase liquidity. Okay, and because it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week across digital marketplaces, it changes the scope of things. It makes things a little easier to get involved, because you're not going through a brokerage firm having to go through all this stuff in order to get something done. You can do stuff on a decentralized basis and do everything on a digital asset basis, and you can get things done quickly, smoothly, and you can find your off-ramp to fiat wherever you're using it, because you can do stuff elsewhere and you can have an account, you know, a digital asset account with a centralized regulated institution, and bring stable coins or other things into that account in order to find liquidity. So there are ways to do it. Tokenized commodities, you know, honestly, they can, you know, over time can integrate into, you know, futures markets. They can integrate into digitally deliverable futures contracts. It's possible. If the CME or ICE, they go and they implement this, which I feel they will be, okay, where they can have smart contract-based settlement mechanisms, automated collateral management, and the like, I think this is all going to start coming together, and it's going to be really, really interesting. Okay, the institutional benefits here are simple. You know, investors and institutional investors, they gain a greater confidence in the asset verification, the custody. That's, they want to make sure that this is not fraudulent, that is there. They're not going to go put their money into something, all of a sudden, boom, it's not there. Okay, you know, you're talking about, you know, real-time, high-fidelity data. Okay, if fixed APIs involved, you know, and things like that, it reduces the reliance on the reporting, the periodic reporting and manual reconciliation, where people are putting papers into, you know, together, which can, you know, if someone wants to commit fraud, they can smudge something on a sheet and all of a sudden, boom, fraud begins. So blockchain knocks that out of the park. Okay, and you talk, you know, programmable compliance. These are things that can be put into this stuff. You know, this is all about fraud mitigation, risk mitigation. Well, not risk mitigation, that has to do with the investor, but fraud mitigation has to do with the institutions, you know, because this solves the problem with misreporting inventories, duplicate warehouse receipts, right? You know, I've seen that before. And sometimes it's a mistake, but sometimes it's not. And that's when you get fraud. You know, then you got opaque custody chains where things are going from a third world country. By the time it gets to you, things go awry. You know, so this this is not just for an institution. You know, this can be for anything. This can be for Hershey's, if they're buying chocolate, if they're buying cocoa from a country. This stuff comes into play. This stuff comes into play, and it can be something really big, I believe. Okay, to have immutable transaction records, third party audit verification, real-time asset tracking. Come on, there's so many different things that can be solved just by integrating blockchain. Okay, and it helps to expand the global commodity marketplace, the access. Not so much the marketplace, but the access, because now if you have it tokenized, you know, this can expand participation amongst family offices, other institutions, anywhere, retail markets, blah, blah, blah. Okay, it can, the implications can be pretty high. But again, the high fidelity tokenization, in my opinion, is key to everything. Is key to everything. All right. So now, what I want to do is now we're going to start rolling into geopolitics, derivatives, and the energy markets and the like, and what's happening now. So let me hand everything over to what we call the money man to give you an oversight of what's happening, and just hang on.
As tensions surrounding Iran continue to dominate geopolitical headlines, the global energy markets are closely watching whether the conflict extends beyond the immediate short-term window. While rising oil prices are often attributed to disruptions in physical supply, the reality is more complex. Modern commodity markets are heavily influenced by derivatives trading, geopolitical risk premiums, and speculative positioning that can magnify price movements far beyond what supply and demand fundamentals alone would justify. If instability in Iran persists, the implications extend well beyond the Middle East, affecting energy markets, precious metals, and the strategic calculations of major global powers. The global oil market is frequently described as a supply and demand equation, but in practice, a significant portion of price discovery occurs within derivatives markets. Futures contracts, options, and swaps traded through institutions such as the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and the Intercontinental Exchange allow traders and institutions to hedge risk or speculate on future price movements. When geopolitical tensions rise, particularly in a region responsible for a substantial portion of global oil exports, derivatives traders often price in a risk premium well before any physical disruption occurs. As a result, oil prices may rise even if production levels remain stable because institutional traders and hedge funds may take large speculative positions in crude oil futures. Remember that the volatility will increase as market participants attempt to anticipate potential supply shocks. In scenarios where conflict persists, the derivatives markets can amplify price swings, making oil prices more reflective of future expectations and speculative sentiment than immediate supply shortages. Periods of geopolitical uncertainty frequently drive investors toward traditional safe haven assets such as gold and silver. As with oil, the price movements in precious metals are influenced heavily by derivatives markets. Large institutional positions in gold and silver futures contracts can accelerate price movements when geopolitical tensions intensify. Hedge funds, sovereign wealth funds, and institutional investors often increase exposure to precious metals as a hedge against both geopolitical instability and potential currency volatility. In this environment, we can see gold and silver prices rise rapidly as safe haven demand increases. The futures and options markets historically magnify movements through leverage and speculative positioning. While institutional portfolio rebalancing can create momentum-driven price trends, the result is a dynamic where geopolitical events in one region ripple through multiple asset classes across global markets. Another critical variable in the evolving energy landscape is the role of Russia. As one of the world's largest energy exporters, Russia remains a central player in global oil supply dynamics. Since the onset of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Western sanctions have constrained Russia's access to many international financial and energy markets. However, Russian oil continues to reach global markets through alternative trade routes and discounted pricing mechanisms. If sanctions were to be relaxed or partially lifted, global oil markets could see an increase in available supply, potentially easing upward pressure on crude prices. This could lead to a greater integration of Russian energy into traditional trading channels and stabilization in certain segments of the global energy supply chain. However, such a shift would introduce a difficult geopolitical trade-off. Relaxing sanctions on Russia could potentially help stabilize energy markets, but it may simultaneously weaken the Western coalition's strategy in supporting Ukraine during the ongoing conflict. In this sense, energy policy and geopolitical strategy remain tightly intertwined. The broader geopolitical calculus also involves the strategic interests of major global economic powers, including the United States, European Union, and China. A prolonged destabilization in Iran has historically created risks for trade routes, shipping lanes, and regional security. Any reduction in long-term tensions could open opportunities for increased commercial activity throughout the Middle East and surrounding regions. Potential benefits of reduced Iranian influence could include improved maritime security in key energy corridors, expanded trade routes connecting Asia, Europe, and the Middle East, greater stability for multinational infrastructure and energy projects. For China and Europe, both heavily dependent on imported energy, reduced geopolitical risk in the region could translate into more predictable supply chains and lower long-term energy volatility. However, geopolitical history suggests that the removal or weakening of a dominant regional actor rarely results in long-term stability without broader structural change. In many cases, power vacuums created by major geopolitical shifts have historically been filled by new actors seeking influence. Whether through emerging political factions, regional rivals, or non-state actors, the dynamics of power in the Middle East have often proven resilient and complex. In this context, even if tensions involving Iran were eventually reduced, the strategic landscape of the region would likely continue evolving. Markets may experience temporary relief from geopolitical risk premiums, but the underlying structural volatility of global energy markets would remain. Ultimately, the situation illustrates how modern financial markets operate at the intersection of geopolitics, commodities, and derivatives trading. Oil, gold, and silver prices do not simply respond to physical supply constraints, they respond to expectations, speculation, and the strategic decisions of governments and institutions. If the conflict involving Iran extends beyond the near term, the ripple effects will likely continue to shape global markets. Energy prices, safe haven assets, and geopolitical alliances will all be influenced not only by developments on the ground but also by the powerful financial mechanisms that translate geopolitical risk into market volatility. And this is what you, as investors, should be looking out for.
As I said, we brought on the money man to make the show a little more interesting, and I hope that is giving you some information. Further information that'll help you. Anyway, I want to thank you for tuning in to Money Never Sleeps Radio, and we'll be back with you for another episode of Money Never Sleeps. And until then, I want you guys to have a great trading day. Thank you.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio in your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Velazquez and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.